Okay, guten Erev Shabbos. This week's parsha is Parsha Shlach, and we're going to talk about the concept of mazel, which people translate sometimes as luck, but that's not really what it means in the in rabbinic and Gemara thought. We'll talk about what it means in a minute, but we're going to talk about the concept of mazel and. In the Gemara and in rabbinic thought, the mazel means the constellation of innate character abilities and style that you have, and possibly other circumstances that are preordained, according to what seems to be the belief of many of Chazal. Based on the particular astrological patterns and signs that you were born under. Now, the Rambam and Rav Sajigon, they both maintain that it's a faulty belief, that it might be that some of Chazal believed in astrology, but it wasn't the normative position, or that they utilized the belief that the Hamon had in astrology to talk to them about certain concepts, which were true anyway, even though they didn't necessarily place validity in the positions of the stars and how they influenced people. However, the majority of Rishonim seemed to hold of the validity of astrology, that it did somehow or another affect a person's character and fate. And the truth is, you look at many of the Gemaras, it seems to be taken as for granted. Now, to a degree, we're going to get into this more a little bit later about what this all means to us, but to a degree, whether or not you think that the stars have an influence on your character and your fate is really a moot point. Because we ourselves, we are very sophisticated, and I say this tongue-in-cheek, we're very sophisticated scientifically, and we're very advanced. So we don't believe in stars, right? But we believe in genes, right? Even though we can't see them, scientists tell us that our genes dictate how we're going to behave and what we're going to do. We have drug companies that tell us that the reason why we're depressed is because of chemical imbalances. We don't really know what that means, but they tell it to us, so we believe it. So the point is, whatever validity there are to those concepts, it really doesn't matter whether it's the stars or it's one's genetic makeup or it's one innate character or the circumstances, the psychological circumstances of which a person is born, you know, the things one learns from their family. The point is that there are certain things, as it were, that are our fate to a degree, right? Someone who grows up in an intellectual family will be more likely to develop intellectually. Somebody who grows up in a simple family that doesn't stress intellectual development might focus his energies elsewhere. Of course, it is possible that a person can transcend their environment. So if Beethoven or Mozart, grew up in some African village where they didn't have access to pianos and stringed instruments and just had a wooden flute and a drum, would they have still composed their music? Possibly, possibly not. If the Vilna Gaon grew up in some desert community and had ignorant parents, would he become a great Talmud Chacham? Unlikely, but possible, right? So the point is, it's really moot whether it's the stars or it's one's circumstances or one's genes. The valuable point here to understand is that clearly we are born into circumstances, whether it's our character or, like I said, our family background. We are born into circumstances. And because we're born into circumstances as Torah-thinking Jews, We have to grapple with that, because we also know that a cornerstone, and we've seen this in some of our other discussions, that a cornerstone of Jewish belief is bechira chafshis, the ability for a person to make their own choices, to choose good over evil. So whatever dispositions that we have, and sometimes the dispositions can indeed be very challenging. We have to grapple with what that means in the context of sachar and onesh, reward and punishment, and free will. So let's take a look at some of the sources that stimulated my thinking in this direction that start in this week's parsha and, of course, expand beyond the week's parsha. In the parsha itself, it says, Shlach lecha anoshim, that Hashem tells Moshe, you will send out these men. The men are going to be the meraglim who are going to spy out the land. And the pasuk gives their names. Now the Gemara in Sota, Alam Adalim and Beis, points out, Om Rebbe Yitzchak, Davarzem Masoris Biadenu Me'avosenu, Meraglim Al Shem Maaseim. We have a tradition that the Meraglim's name, that their name indicated their deeds. Va'anulo also Biadenu El Echad. We lost track of the tradition as to what the names actually meant, but we know that each one of the Meraglim's name signified some act or deed that they was going to do. And he said, we only know of one now. And he said, for example, Sesur ben Michael, that was his name. And why? Because Shasar Masav Shal Kodesh Baruch Hu, that he turned away and against the acts of Hashem. Okay. We find other, by the way, there's many characters in the Torah whose names describe their behavior. Just coming off of Shavuos, you might notice that that Elimelech's two children who were doomed to die, they were named Mahlon and Kilion, which loosely translates to illness and destruction. So maybe their names were a little bit different, and then as a play on words, the Megillah gave them those names, or possibly the parents named them that because they had a fear that they had a premonition that something bad would happen, so for Ayin Hara, they gave that name. We do find for Ayin Hara, there was a tradition where people would give children bad names kind of to forestall Ayin Hara. So, for example, there was a people who called there's a woman called Lach Luchis mentioned in the Gemara Nedarim. She was dirty. It turned out that she wasn't so pretty, but maybe the parents thought they didn't want her to attract too much attention, so they named her dirty. Very interesting things. Anyway, I'm getting a little bit lost because it is fascinating, but it's not today's conversation. But the point is, getting back to our conversation, the Meraglim were given names that seemed to dictate their behavior. So, were their names destiny? Right. That's the discussion that we're starting to have about if there's a quality that you have, and if your name characterizes your quality. After all, it says the parents have Ruach HaKodesh when they choose the name. You know, is that quality destiny? Now, another interesting part of this week's parasha that also looks at destiny and mazel. In Pasuk Chaf and Perek Yud Gimel, when Moshe is instructing the Meraglim to check out Eretz Yisrael, he tells them, Ma'oretz Hashemeno hi imroza, is a land, fat or thin, hayesh bo eitz im ayin, does it have a tree or not? Kliyoker, in one of his pshatim, he reads into, what does this mean, a tree? He said, a tree is a shade. A tree means a shadow, like it says later on when I think it's either, I forget whether it's Moshe or Kalev or Yeshua, I'm not sure which one, but they're telling the Jews that we can fight them. It says, Sart Sila Me'aleihem, their shade has been removed from them, their protection has been removed from them, we can attack them, and we can be victorious. But what's the shade? So Kliyaka says that some, check out and see if there's a protective factor. The protective factor would be HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha, because Eretz Yisrael runs not just on mazel, but it runs from Hashem's Hashgacha. And the question is, were the people of the land zocha to the Hashgacha or not? Which obviously would make fighting against them much more difficult. And the investigation would be to see that true, the land might be under Hashem's Hashgacha, but the people not necessarily so, and they're subject to mazel. But the Jews, let's say, who live in Eretz Yisrael, they would experience hashgacha that would go beyond their normal destiny, beyond their mazel. So what teachings do we have about mazel, about a person's, like I said, their predisposition and their fate? So the Gemara and the Dharma, the Habezman Aleph, talks about Avraham's nevuah, where Hashem is telling Avraham he's going to have a child. And in this experience, the pasuk says, "Ayotzes achutza." He takes him outside. He takes him outside. Pashpashad is, he takes him outside. He shows him the stars. But the Medrash says that Avram was thinking, I know from my mazel that I have a very dry, necessitated mazel. That means that I really don't have life-giving capacity. I'm not destined to be able to produce children. And that's my natural, call it the genes, call it physiology, whatever you want to call it. That is what Avram knew himself to be. And Hashem says to him, "Say mi et tagnino shelcha in mazel Yisrael. You, I'm going to take you out from the normal process, from the normal fate and predetermination that affects people in a general sense, because obviously in a specific sense there's still sachar v'onesh, but you will be out of that because ein mazel b'Yisrael. There's no, that by a Jew, there isn't mazel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his influence." And then the Gemara goes on to say, and this last piece we're going to study more in depth a little bit later, the Gemara goes on to say, Omer Rabbi Yisra, kol mat mim atzmo, if one makes himself simple, in other words, simply trusts Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mat mim imo. Hashem then provides him a simple, uncomplex response, meaning, presumably meaning, it's pretty hard to know exactly what Chazal mean, because they're talking about some very deep concepts, but presumably meaning that if someone puts a simple faith in Hashem and doesn't look too much into his destiny, but puts a simple faith in Hashem, Hashem will also not make all kinds of cheshbonos, of sachar, of onish, and all these things, and grant the person some protection and guidance. It's interesting to note, by the way, that if you look in the last volume of the Igros Moshe, I think now they put out another volume after that, so it might not be the last volume, but in one of the last volumes of the Igros Moshe, which were published by his grandchildren, they devote about 20 pages to a biography of Rav Moshe, and it's a very significant biography because the grandsons at least maintain that Rav Moshe would not speak about his life casually at all, and he would only tell over stories from his life that he felt had an important Musa Haskell to his children. So this biography is not is really in the category of Torah. If we take what they say at face value, that what they're transmitting to us is really facts that Rav Moshe wanted his children and grandchildren to know, that would guide them. And Rav Moshe had a practice, which is the things that were beyond his control, he did not want to know about. And for example, there was a time where he seemed to have some kind of coronary event during a shiur, and they rushed him to the hospital, of course, and they did whatever kind of interventions that one does. And parenthetically, shmartem ba'odos nafshasechem, you should know that the initial half an hour after a heart attack or a stroke is crucial for medical intervention, and that actually it makes an enormous difference, the effect and damage that could come from it. And one of the studies show is that people delay going to the hospital. You know, they have chest pains and they delay going to the hospital, and they'll do anything. They'll ride a bicycle to the hospital, they'll walk 5 miles to the hospital, they'll take a car service to the hospital, but they won't call an ambulance. So just, it is an Indian Shemadism, little public service announcement there. But anyway, Rav Moshe, he had this coronary event. He went to the hospital, and after they gave him some kind of treatment, and then they said they wanted to run a test to determine whether he had a heart attack or not. I'm not a doctor, but as I understand, there's certain things they could see in the blood that show if there was a heart attack. And he asked, would it affect my treatment in any way? Is there any nafka mina? Would you treat me differently? Is there different recommendations that would come? And they said, no, we just want to know if you have it or not. So he declined the test. He didn't want to know. And the pasuk that he used is, Tamim Tiyam Hashem Elokecha. There's no reason for me to know. I trust simply in Hashem. If there be if somehow or another, knowing this medical fact would indicate a different course of treatment, so then it's a mitzvah. Shmartim motiv nafshas eichem. But if knowing this medical fact wouldn't influence anything, he didn't want to know. He'd rather trust in Hashem. It's very interesting. So, anyway, that's how the Gemara Nedarim ends, that there is no mazel for Yidden. There's no mazel. That the stars, or as I said, the predetermined nature or genes or whatever you want to call it, do not affect a person. They do not affect a Jew. And that if one has simple faith and trust in Hashem, he will be guided accordingly and not by his fate. Now, that's not the whole story. That's not the whole story at all. Let's take a look at Gemara on Shabbos on Kuf Nun Vav and Aleph. It's actually Machlokas Amaroyim. Idmar Rebbe Chanina Omer Mazel Machkim Mazel Mashir V'yesh Mazel Yisrael. The Mazel is in charge of whether or not you are smart. The Mazel is in charge of whether or not you're wealthy. And again, like I said, is it the stars or is it your genes? Whatever it is, you're born with certain qualities. You're born into a family with certain abilities. This decides whether or not you're going to be wealthy or not by and by, and whether you're going to be smart or not by and by. That's Rabbi Hanina's position. Rabbi Yochanan, who it seems we paskin like, Rabbi Yochanan, Omar ein mazel Yisrael. There is no mazel. There is no mazel at all. And this pasuk, he says, Kalmar Hashem, the pasuk in Yirmiyah, El derech ha-goyim al tlamedu, do not learn from the ways of the goyim, and meosas ha-shemayim al techatu, do not be afraid of signs from heaven, ki yichatu ha-goyim mehema, the goyim, the nations, they are afraid of these things. Heim yichatu v'lo Yisrael. The Gemara comments, they are afraid, not the Jews. Okay? And Rav also says, Ein mazel b'Yisrael. So it would seem that Jews are not subject to fate and any of the predispositions that nature and physiology and mentality and family background and anything would have, because our connection to Hashem is powerful enough that it overrides the regular fate, and whatever we deserve at the time will happen. Well, that's not the full story. So Tosus over there makes it clear. Tosus says, "Ein mazel Yisrael, v'ha'adam arava b'shilimo et katan bane chayim v'zoni labas chusatayim ilse el b'mazla talyim ilse." He says, Rava says, children and parnasa, and your general length of your life, this is not tully in schus, it's tully in your mazel. Again, how you were born, what your genetic makeup is how you are. So Tosa says, because that's true, but mikol makom ayidei schus godol mishtana. Through a great schus, the difference is that by a Jew, through a great schus, he could override the fate. But it takes a great zechus. Tosos and Yevamos on Daf Nun Amud Aleph explains even further. He says that it takes a great zechus, and he says that even sometimes, even with the greatest of zechusim, I should say it was a chuyot, the greatest of them, it's still for particular reasons, not necessarily known to us, Hashem cannot allow it to change. And he quotes the Gemara in Tainus. So what's the Gemara in Tainus? Well, Gemara in Tainus tells us a story about Rav Loza ben Pedas. And he was very poor. And he had to do bloodletting, which in those days was a medical practice, that they would let out a nice quantity of blood, which would stimulate, it would release, they believed it would release toxins. There is some scientific evidence, by the way, that it's helpful. Maybe it would stimulate some kind of reaction or whatever, but the point is that this is something they used to do. Even in the Middle Ages, I believe they did this, and it did seem to have some positive effect. And in any case, they did the bloodletting, and he did the bloodletting, and afterwards, of course, he was very, very hungry. He needed to eat, but he was so poor. He only could find garlic peels, not the garlic. If you've ever seen real garlic, you have this crinkly, difficult, and certainly not pleasant to eat shell. It's like the peel of an onion. And this is all he had to eat. So he was faint, and he fell asleep. The Rabbanan went to ask him a shaila, and they saw while he was, I don't know if he was sleeping or he was fainting, they saw that he was crying and smiling. And they saw some kind of pillar of fire that went out from his face. So they knew that he was having some kind of spiritual experience. When they woke him up, they asked, what was going on? Why were you crying? Why were you smiling? So he said, well, what happened was Hashem spoke to me, and I said to him, you know, how long am I going to struggle in this world? I mean, I don't have what to eat. And Hashem said, well, you know, if you want, I could turn back the clock. But if I do that, I've got to go all the way back from the beginning. I have to basically rewind the entire creation, because the way you are right now is, now we're going to talk about Pasha Pshat, and then we're going to talk about what it means more deeply. But the Pasha Pshat seems to be saying that he is a victim of his mazel. He is a victim, again, of the stars or of his genes or of the way in which the world flows and all the circumstances that led up to him at this point. And the only way to undo that would be to go back to Sheshis and Mebreshis and reconfigure everything, so to change the whole stream and flow of time so that something different would happen, which would be an enormous undertaking. Still, Hashem discusses with him that possibility. So he says, well, which version of life is better for me in the end? Meaning like La'asid Lavo, right? Which version of life is going to be best for me? So Hashem says, the version you're in right now. So he says, I don't want it. So Tosus quotes that Gemara to show you that sometimes, even with the big skluss, your mazel can't change. Now, I believe, and this is really my own thought, so you could take it or leave it, but I believe what the Gemara is driving at is as follows, that sometimes a person, because of who they are, has to go through unpleasant experiences. And those unpleasant experiences are more important for their well-being than the pain that they're suffering. And I'll give you some examples from another Gemara in a minute, but just I want you to digest that. So for example, let us say the Gemara talks about, where is that Gemara? It's a Gemara about Rav's wife. She was a very, very difficult woman, and he went through a lot of misery with her. Sorry, I don't remember where it is at the moment. But the Gemara talks about Rav's wife, and she was very difficult, but Rav didn't want to divorce her, and Rav felt that you know, it was what it was for him. The point being that one might presume this was his basharet, and that if he would have been married to somebody else, while he might have been, quote, happier, he may have been in some other way out of control. It may have affected his Yerushalayim. And so, or this person here who was poor, a story over here in Tainis, or Leza ben Pedas, maybe he was miserable being poor, really miserable, really suffering. But perhaps if he didn't have that, then he would have been in some way out of control. So the poverty shaped him in a way that he needed based on his disposition and his personality. Even though it was really unpleasant, it shaped him. And I'll bring you a proof from this. So the Gemara in Shabbos on Kuf Nun Vav Amud Aleph, and I really wanted to quote more of it, but I don't have time. It goes through several examples of people who seem to have been predestined for one fate and then were saved. The final example is the Gemara in again the Gemara in Shabbos and Kufnan Vav, and it talks about Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Now, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's mother was told also by some kind of stargazer that your son is going to be a ganav. He can be a bandit. So let's say again, as I said earlier in this year, tongue in cheek, we're not superstitious, so we didn't believe in astronomy. So your 5-year-old goes to the doctor, and the doctor says your son has ADD and he's going to be very, very difficult, or your son, because of a quote chemical imbalance invented by the pharmaceutical industry to sell drugs. Not to say that people don't have ADD. People do have ADD. The question is where does it come from, and what's the best way to solve it? And even if medication is a good way to solve a problem, which it is at times, people, please don't misunderstand that. There's some people that definitely require medication to treat their psychological conditions. However, However, to put it in the words of one researcher, just because you have a headache and Tylenol cures your headache doesn't mean that you're suffering from a genetic Tylenol deficiency in your bloodstream. You maybe Tylenol helps, but it doesn't mean that you have a Tylenol deficiency in your brain. And maybe certain medications help people, but it doesn't mean they have any kinds of chemical imbalances at all. It's a figment of it's a superstitious belief created by an industry. But the point is that, again, that doesn't mean the medication isn't important. It's helpful. It's just important to be honest what we're doing over here, because there's a lot of ways to help people, and it's not fate. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's mom was told that her son's going to be a ganav. He has a behavior problem. So what does she do? She was makpid. In those days, not everybody wore a yarmulke all the time. She was makpid that his head would be constantly covered so that he'd feel Yerushimayim. Very good. He'd feel Yerushimayim. And he never understood why, which, by the way, is interesting. And I don't have more time to go into the whys, because it's very interesting. She never told him why. She didn't tell him why. She didn't want to burden him with the knowledge. But he always wondered why she was so mocked. And then the Gemara says, one day, while he was learning, he was sitting underneath a date tree, and his yarmulke was probably much bigger than a yarmulke. It was probably something more like a kafia, you know, big. His head covering fell off, or a turban, whatever the case may be. And he therefore had a momentary lapse in his Yerushimayim, and he was so hungry and overcome with desire, he jumped up and ate from the date tree. And I believe the Gemara says over there that it was taka, it was gezel, but he couldn't help himself. He was overcome, and he realized to himself, that's why my mother wanted me to always have my head covered to reduce my desire, to help me control my Yitzhahara, to help me feel Yerushimayim. What's the point, though? The point is, there's really two fascinating points. One point is that he had a predisposition, and yet through this intervention, he was able to affect positively his disposition. That's A. And B, his mother didn't tell him about it, which I think brings us back to, and there's a few Gemaras like that. If you look at the Gemara over there in Kuf Nun Vav Amud Aleph and Kuf Nun Vav Amud Beis, it goes through a number of stories. It goes through a story about Rabbi Akiva's daughter, and it goes through a story about some person that Shmuel and Avlet were watching. Avlet was a stargazer of the time. And the point is that all three people, they were never told about their fate, even though it might have been helpful on the surface for them to know about their fate. And the conclusion, I believe, is back to the Gemara that we saw on Sota, on Lamed Daled Amud Beis, that you need to be simple with Hashem, that one needs to walk simply. So that is the way that you're Zocha. To partially, it's one of the tools, right? Tosa says you have to have a great schus to overcome the mazel. Right, but the Gemara also mentions that if you walk simply with Hashem, that's also helpful. So, getting back to our story, and what it means to us, all of us have different predispositions, different natures. Some of us have greater desires than others, and some of us have very difficult family backgrounds and traumas that create tremendous challenges for us to manage in a normal way, and that's of course very, very hard, and that is really what Chazal are talking about when they say mazel, because like I said, mazel's just a word, it's just a concept, whether it's the stars or it's the psychological environment that you were born to. It's the same thing, and we have these things and we have these challenges. However, ein mazel b'Yisrael. The relationship that a person has and his ability to realize that he's powerless and to allow Hashem into his life and to guide him elevates him above that predisposition, elevates him above that mazel. And because of that, he can overcome his circumstances, like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's mother did, and like other people. However, as Tosa says, it ain't so simple. It takes a lot of schus, and even then sometimes it's just not right because a person needs to experience these things for other reasons that we can't fully understand. So there's more to say. However, the time is short, and I have to run to another meeting. If people have questions, you could look on the Gardroid website. My email's around; it's available. You can email me regarding this year. I wish you all a great Shabbos. Take care.